Hey everybody, welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. I'm John Burke, and with me from across the pond is Matt Hudson from whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. Matt, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, doing very, very, very well, JB. Seen a few films this week, finally. Been a little bit lean in the last few weeks, and after last week's debacle with my internet, I can tell you right now, barring another surge of awful broadband providers, I will be here for the entire episode for this week, JB. But yeah, I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing pretty good, pretty good. You know, I don't think, have I told you the pistachio story yet?
I want to say yes, because you said something about pistachios the other day, and now somebody else told me about pistachios the other day.
Oh, weird.
To do like an ice cream. So you tell me, and I'll tell you if you did or not.
So at my new job, I went to use the restroom.
Yes, you did. But you, okay. But you didn't expand on it.
Well, there's not much to expand on. It was baffling to walk into a restroom and find a person standing at the counter, eating a bag of pistachios, with so much fervor, you know, like one after another, like he had a deadline. I felt like a weird place to choose to have your snack. But you know, like to each their own, but it's like, you know, I find the bathroom not a place where I generally want to bring outside food, and also then eat said food. Especially there are so many options for seats at this school, everywhere. There's benches and there's like picnic table type things, plenty of spots. But I was a little stunned to walk in and find the guy eating pistachios in the restroom. It was funny because it's just like, you know,
because it wasn't you.
Well, you don't expect to run into certain things in certain situations. You know, you walk into a bathroom, there's a lot of things that I would not be surprised to witness, you know? not one on the list that I was, like, anticipating. So it was I'm, like, weird how pistachios were the nut of choice for the bathroom. But, you know?
I mean, I struggle to eat on certain tables in public refectories just because I don't think they've been cleaned. There's no way in hell am I taking anything into the bathroom to eat it, even if I'm on a deadline. There is no deadline on this earth which would stop me from eating my food outside of the bathroom. But hey, look, fair play, the guy's obviously committed to being where he needed to be and decided the best place to eat his pistachios was in the bathroom. But yeah, more power to him,
I guess. Some snacks are expendable. So, listeners, that's what we're here to talk about. I don't know how to say this title, to be fair. I don't know what's happening in Hollywood with these naming conventions of movie franchises, but we are here to discuss Expendables 4, but it's spelled expend, replace the A, put a 4 there, bulls. So it's Expend4bles.
Expendables.
It kind of looks like an A, but they didn't do that with 3 or 2. I mean, it starts with an E. So your 3 is right there.
If they do another one, they're replacing the S with a 5. You know they will do if they do another one.
I don't know that they will. I feel like they'll throw in a subtitle for 5 because it's just all of these movie franchises are so all over the place with the naming conventions. None worse than the Fast and the Furious franchise, of course. But I wish they would just keep it simple. Expendables 4. Why do we need to be fancy? The whole point of these movies is the throwback to the 80s, you know, like,
yes,
let's keep it easy. But it's been a minute. It's been what, like 10 years since Expendables
9
3,
years,
I think.
Yeah.
9. I don't think I ever saw 3.
I did. And it was,
I definitively saw 1 and 2, and I liked 1 and 2.
2's okay. 2's all right. I don't mind 2.
Yeah.
First one's okay. 2's, I think, better. 3.
Ooh. Who's the villain in 3? Is that Gibson?
I don't even. Yes, because the second one is
Van Damme is Villain.
That's right. Yeah,
right. Is Van Damme 1 or 2? I think he's 2.
He's 2. Van Damme is 2.
Villain was like I died laughing when I heard the inspired naming of our villain. I'm like, oh, you worked real hard on that one, guys. So you went, oh, he's the Villain because he's French.
You know, they got the new guy. You got like the 15-year-old temp came in and they said, how do you say that? I don't know, Villain. You've cracked it. That's our bad guy's name. Sweet.
Yes, I think I skipped 3 partly because Mel Gibson was brought in and everyone was kind of like, whoa, a little soon, isn't it? And obviously he's had a lot of resurgence since then. But but you know what, Matt? When I saw the trailer for Expendables 4, I was like, yeah, this doesn't look too bad. I like dumb action films sometimes, you know, like sometimes I just want stuff to blow up and muscular guys to flex and go, yeah. And then sometimes I watch those movies that I'd be like, hey, this could be fun, and realize that it's not fun. And it's more like torture and the level of stupidity that they have to get to in order to qualify as stupid is a new bar. It's like they're challenging themselves. It's like, how much dumber can these movies get? What if we put our sniper in a wig for some reason that they don't, I mean, they explain, but they don't explain. when your number one recurring joke falls on to Randy Couture, a UFC fighter who was, I'm pretty sure, has only been in these movies and UFC based, or I'm sorry, MMA based movies outside of this. One character whose name, I think we're supposed to know his dad, but I don't remember the movies well enough to know who he's supposed to be. They show him like for a second later, but Jacob Scipio plays Gallen. Like, the dude just says some of the craziest, like, the, I can't imagine who wrote the monologues for this character, because they are off the wall, crazy, like, inappropriate.
Is he the one they literally tell to stop talking halfway, partway through? They're just like, just stop.
At one point, he does stop talking, at least they say so, but then he definitely talks, and then later decides to, like, oh, I'm going to stop talking. I'm like, you've already spoken. You don't get to do that now, but nevertheless, let's get into the stats about Expendables 4. Okay. Director Scott Wau? Is that how you say that? W-A-U-G-H? Wow?
War. Or Wah. War.
Wah? Wah. Yeah. Wah. Yeah. Kurt Wimmer, Tad Daggerhart, and Max Adams are accredited writers. I'm sure they put so much thought into the writing of this film, so I'm sure there's not other people listed or whatnot. The cast. Now, the one thing the Expendables franchise has always had was this star-studded action legacy, right? Like, that was what they were for. It was Stallone kind of being this machismo guy going, like, action films aren't what they used to be. We're going to bring it back to the 80s, and we're going to have all these, like, old-school, washed-up actors back in. And then we trickle in, like, you got a Jet Li, and you got a Jason Statham, who were more modern, but still were definitely on the way out of the traditional machismo-based action stars. So this one's lacking in that there's no Jet Li, which I don't know if Jet's just like completely retired, but I was a little bummed that Jet wasn't in it, because I always liked him and Statham together in the other movies. Mm-hmm. But here we got Jason Statham as Christmas, which I did not remember his name was Christmas, and that was
surname
blowing my mind. 50 Cent is second billed on IMDb. I don't know how they decided to list this, but 50 Cent showing up, Megan Fox, Dolph Lundgren, Tony Jaa, Iko Uwais, I'm sure I said that so wrong, I apologize, Iko.
We're here for it.
Andy Garcia, yes, that's right, folks, this is not Mamma Mia 2, nor is it one of the many old lady rom-coms that Andy Garcia has been frequenting in. He has stepped out of that path to be the Kurt Russell character in this movie. It's such a, I don't know why I've now associated Kurt Russell in the Fast and Furious franchise as a type of character that didn't exist in other films. He definitely did, but in my head now it's Kurt Russell. Yeah. Sylvester Stallone, way down on the list. I don't understand what's going on here. Randy Couture, Jacob Scipio, and then Levi Tran, or Levi Tran. She deserves to be referenced. I think everyone else can be left off. I don't feel like they play major roles. All right, that's everybody big. So it's obviously not the level of cast we're used to have. Also Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis, which obviously understood why Bruce Willis isn't in this cast now, but they were at least in the movie, even if they didn't play a major role. Then you had Van Damme. I remember them talking about Seagal. I don't know if he ever actually ended up doing or not.
Do you think you had Banderas, Wesley Snipes, Gibson, Harrison Ford, Arnie, Chuck Norris.
That's right.
Yeah, Van Damme, Bruce Willis, like you said, Jet Li, Terry Crews was in it. These are going to be sprinkled across the three films, and then you have
Ronda Rousey. You couldn't even get Terry Crews for this? What's happening?
I think Terry Crews was more real life situation. Obviously, he's had a lot of sexual assault allegations against Hollywood, and I think he's
right.
He's saying no, I'm not
the other way.
You guys. No. Yeah. So this was say historical. It's within the last few years, but I think he's kind of stepped away. Yeah. And he, probably for the best, but you had Ronda Rousey, Stone Cold Steve Austin, people like that also kind of popped in and out. But you know, it's usually like a Hall of Fame, isn't it? This was, it was. The last three.
And then I thought, oh, well, maybe we're just going to really narrow in on like Statham and Stallone, you know, like make that the more of like a buddy comedy or something, or a buddy action film. And they don't really do that either. The synopsis here for this film, Expendables 4, obviously we need to know the plot. Armed with every weapon they can get their hands on, I guess, the Expendables are the world's last line of defense and the team that gets called when all other options are off the table. So that's not the plot of this movie.
Awful synopsis, that is.
Yeah, that's the synopsis of the franchise, I guess. Like,
big men get big weapons and blow things up. There's your synopsis.
Yeah. So critics are kind of universally not liking this. It's got a 15% on RT for critic score, but a 70% on audience score. That does happen with these types of movies. When I was walking out of the theater, surprisingly, two older ladies had gone together to watch Expendables 4 and very much enjoyed it. They were very excited when we were walking out and they were talking on the way to the car. We were not together, but we just happened to be like in earshot. And yeah, they very much seemed to enjoy it. But the Metascore says 30. IMDb user score, though, is 5.2, which is much more reasonable to me than 70% on RT. But I guess that 0.2 is what pushes up that percentage, because it doesn't have to be good. It just has to be positive over negative. Mm-hmm. And then Letterboxd, 2.1. So the Letterboxd community out with a vengeance on this film. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to dislike about this film. So many things don't make sense. Some of the performances are way over the top, which, you know, can work, except the overall plot that we can't go into a lot of details with, folks, because we discussed off air if it's a spoiler, and there is a major point in the early, like, first 20 minutes that sets the kind of direction of the plot, and the tone of that moment is not matched through a lot of the performances. And that's one of the things I think it does very wrong, is it sets up something that could have emotional weight for the film and the characters involved. And it's supposed to, but then the movie's just like, whatever. We're just going to do dumb, stupid things over and over again. The set design is weird on a lot of it. There's a lot of story. These movies shouldn't really worry about story so much, right? Like we need a basic, like, this is the mission, go do the mission type story. And they felt like they had to lay down so much backstory for all of the stuff going on that you're just getting exposition dumps all over the place. Like, every time two characters are together, there's an exposition dump. And then the Randy Couture ear joke that is like, oh, well, you see, I used to wrestle back in high school, comes up three times in this movie, and I'm just like, his ears always look like that. I don't remember if they made that joke previously, if it was like a callback to the other movies. I don't feel like it was. The wig thing with Dolph Lundgren, he has an axe at one point. Like, he has, like, it's like a tomahawk, I think he calls it trauma hawk. And it's like, it's set up so hard and it's barely paid off. That's the issue with so much of this film, is there's so much setup and then the payoffs never feel like it's worth all of the time it took to do the setup. Like, we spent so much time getting this set up and then, like, that's the payoff. That's the final thing. That's the final moment, like, across the board. And I don't want to talk ill of specific actors, but I've been playing Mortal Kombat 1 a lot. I don't know if you know this or not, but Megan Fox is the voice of one of the characters in Mortal Kombat 1.
Yes, Nimana or something. Yeah, I know.
Natara, and it's terrible.
I've heard it's very monotone.
It feels so out of place with the rest of the game, because the rest of the game is so good. And every time she shows up, I'm like, oh, this is bad. And then
just hire voice actors.
Yeah, and I'm watching this movie and I'm thinking, hey, you know what? I've liked Megan Fox and stuff. I haven't seen Jennifer's Body in a while, but I liked her performance there. I didn't dislike her in the first TMNT movie where she's April O'Neil. I think maybe not as good in the second one, but I remembered not minding her. And it's been a long time since I watched the original three Transformers films. But I liked her in the first one. I don't think she's in the third one. I think she's in the first two. I liked her in the first one back then. I don't know if it holds up. Maybe it doesn't. But, man, she's either just done acting or... I don't know, dude. I thought she was not good in this.
No, I'm with you.
And to be fair, she's definitely being given terrible dialogue. Like, that's across the board. I don't think any actor benefits from the lines they're asked to say in this film. 50 Cent feels the most like I'm going to commit to, like, trying, even though the things I'm saying aren't exactly cool. I'm going to be 50 Cent. I'm going to be cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, and then Andy Garcia just chewing the scenery. He's
hamming it up.
So much, right? Like, which maybe is just him, like, I don't know why I'm doing this movie. I was making a killing in the old lady comedies. You know, he's great in Book Club 2, and I think he's at the end of the original Book Club, and he's incredible in Mamma Mia 2, or Mamma Mia : Here We Go Again, and I think he was in another one. Like, I've enjoyed his run of the old, like, attractive silver fox to the ladies. It's been great. And then it's like this, I'm just like, what is he doing here? This feels like, I have not seen Godfather 3, but I've always heard he being the worst part of it. And, like, that's what this feels like. I was really just, ugh. Man, most of my complaints, I feel like, are spoilerific. But the last thing I'll say, and then I'll pass it off to you, Matt, to say whatever you thought about this film. I don't think the action's great for a movie that is built around the action. I mean, there's some decent fights, but you bring in Tony Jaa and Iko Uwais, and two guys who are incredible martial artists, right? Like, I mean, if you've ever seen The Raid or The Raid 2 Redemption, I think it's what it's
insane.
Called.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Insane action. Like, the guy is incredible martial artist. I've actually never seen Ong Bak. I've heard tremendous things.
It's crazy choreography.
Yeah, I've seen some of the fights, like, on YouTube. I've just never watched the whole film. I do have it. It's in a binder I'm looking at right now, in fact. And I want to watch it because I love martial art scenes. I love martial art films. And to bring those two guys in and then not really use them enough. Like, they use them a little bit, but not enough. And, oh, man. Like, you bring Iko in and you give him this, like pencil, a giant wooden pencil. I know it's a Tanfa. I think is the actual name of it, but it's like a sharpened version of it. But it's just so, it doesn't fit who the guy is supposed to be. Overall, there was not a lot here to make it worth the time that you're investing into watching it. I don't expect a movie like this to deliver incredible story. I don't expect it to have great scenes of dialogue. I expect it to deliver on the action and at least simple character motivations. And I don't think it does well on the story at all, that it puts a lot of effort into trying to give us. The action's fine, but I've seen better action movies this year. And it's just, I mean, especially you're putting this out the year John Wick 4 comes out. Like, you're not going to live up to that, but you want to. And I was severely disappointed. I was really hoping for just a dumb, you know, turn your brain off action film that's a lot of fun, and it just wasn't that. And the stuff that they did with the story, I felt was like, come on, man, focus on what you're good at and you're trying to do. Like, I don't want to make any offensive stereotypes about, like, people who do Shakespeare when they should be playing football, but that's the vibe, right? It's like they're trying real hard to give you, like, Tarantino levels of spoken word, witty dialogue, and it's not that. And then they fail to deliver on the thing that you expect, which is the action. So I will stop rambling. Matt, what did you think of Expendables 4?
Well, I'll whisper it quietly. I actually thought this was bloody good fun.
Oh.
Wow. I'm joking. Okay. This was bloody awful, John. Every aspect. I switched my brain off and still felt so dumb after this. I felt dumber. Even though I told myself, don't expect anything, don't expect anything, don't expect anything. Oh, crap, this is even worse than I thought. It's one of the worst things I've seen all year. And it genuinely is, because there's two kind of main reasons. One of them is the film in itself, I think everybody to a man and a woman involved, they're aware of how bad this film is, if you know what I mean, of how self-aware it wants to be. But that cannot save the film because of the reasons that you said, and I'll dive into as well. But also, Expendables, it used to be, like you say, its greatest hits of getting the old timers back and giving them a kind of, not quite a last hurrah, but a victory lap. Now it's become, but it also always felt like it was kind of poking fun a little bit, though, at those films.
Yeah.
It was macho and sweaty and testosterone fueled, but there was an element of kind of winking at the audience. Here, I feel like it's become the very thing it swore to destroy. This over-bloated, abysmal action film, which, like you said, tries to deliver more than it ever should do. It tries to deliver stakes and gravitas and big kind of meaningful taglines and relationships, but none of them work because everybody in this film is horrific. There is not one good performance in this. The only fun thing I enjoyed, which kind of carries over, is Stallone and Statham just kind of riffing off against each other, just having a little bit of banter. I'm here for that. Other than that,
I like Statham.
See, and that's the thing is, I shouldn't do, because every time a guy opens his mouth with a different accent, I'm like, yeah, I think, how are you an actor? What is this? You're a good looking guy. Yeah, you know, you can do the action, but how are you an actor? And I love Statham. Don't get me wrong, I love so many of his films, but there's something about him that is very watchable. I know what it is. I don't know if it's just it's kind of got the magnetic quality to him. I'm not saying like the old film stars of old, but you know, there's something about him that makes it very hard to dislike, even if the films are like this, really not very good. But the CGI is also really bad in this. The effects in this are very, very, very bad, to the point where somebody's in a Jeep and it just looks like they're not in a Jeep. This is why you can't help but see what's going on right behind them. But yes, the action stars have dwindled now to the point where we have 50 Cent, Megan Fox and Randy Couture as integral members of the team. Which
Couture's been in all of them, though.
Like, he has, but I mean, kind of been elevated now to the very top because there's nobody else around him to kind of beef off against.
Yeah.
And Megan Fox, I'm with you. I think Megan Fox, I love Jennifer's Body. I think her and Amanda Seyfried are so good in that. It's such a fun film. I think she's really good in this film called Till Death, this thriller action film a couple of years ago. She's probably her best performance. I really enjoyed her in that. And every now and then she'll pop up and do, you know, nothing wild, but to show everyone, look, there's more here, because I know that she's had a lot of issues with Hollywood, originally just trying to push her as a sex symbol and nothing else. And she's always tried to rally against that, as to say, you know, no, I'm here on merit as well. I can act. And she's shown that many times. But here, I just think everybody was told to dial it up to 10 and just go wild, because we are introduced to her just absolutely off her rocker, screaming and shouting and breaking things at Jason Statham, and it never quietens down from there. That's just a film in general. But do you know what? I bet these films are really fun to make, though. You know they're fun to make, JB. It's what? I don't know, 6 weeks maybe of just pouting, posing, flexing, driving fast cars, you know, playing with toy guns and having like play fights with your mates. I bet they're really fun to film, aren't they? They must be.
They must be, but when you said driving fast cars, you reminded me, every time they're driving and we get a close-up, it looks so bad.
Yes. Like,
the separation of the green screen and or I don't know if they're using the volume, maybe.
I think it's straight up green screen.
It's so bad, dude. Like, it's like the cheapest looking visuals. I was just stunned at how bad it looked every time. I'm like, wow, stop cutting in close. It looks awful.
There's a scene of Jason Statham when he's on a bike. This isn't a spoiler. It's in a trailer, I think. He goes up a ramp and he's doing his flips in midair. And for some reason, the film, the editor, the director and editor decide to have a close shot on his face in midair to make us believe that Jason Statham is riding this goddamn motorcycle 50 feet above the air. And the editing itself gave me whiplash. It's so quick. So quick. And, you know, I don't want to... and I know you don't either, but I don't want to compare everything to John Wick, because so many action films nowadays try to be that. And I don't think this is. But when you've got a film like John Wick, which can do action so stylishly, you can have these badass boss fights and also get a sense of you know, what's going on, get a sense of location, get a sense of who's where and who's fighting. Here, it's just so snappy, quick editing that you lose all sense of urgency. You lose all sense of stakes because my brain is trying to catch up with what is going on. So for me, films like this, and I mean that in a non-derogatory term, because like you, I just wanted to see this kind of film should just be a balls to the wall, fun action film, but you've got to get the action right. You know, you've got to deliver good action scenes. The 80s films of old always had almost tongue in cheek nature, despite how, you know, serious they wanted to be. You've got to nail those gags. You've got to nail those jokes. You've got to get the chemistry right between the characters. Yes, Statham is a likable actor. I don't think he's a particularly great lead man in these films. Whereas the action films of old, you clung to those heroes. I don't think this film has any of those. Because I can't look back at the 80s action films and say with a hand on heart that all of them were incredible. Like, nostalgia tells me these are brilliant. There were some very good action films. Of course there were.
Yeah.
But this doesn't get those basics right for me. It has all the cliches. You know, there's a nuclear bomb. Somebody wants to start a war to profit from it, I guess. There's a betrayal in there. You know, there's all these things that happen which you've seen before. I mean, I worked out who the villain was just by looking at the cast list. But there's just, I wanted it to be fun, and I found myself just so desensitized to the mindless, awful action on screen. Not the violence, it's the bad action. I got desensitized. I didn't get a thrill from it. I didn't really find any stakes for the characters, apart from the beat that you mentioned early on, where, like you, I thought, okay, this is ballsy. I like this.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the film doesn't quite, as it goes on, doesn't quite stack up to that. But it's very, you know, it made me think maybe we're going somewhere here. Because, yeah, the last film wasn't great. And I was just looking at the scores, just on RT specifically. But Expendables 1 got 41%. Second one was fresh at 67. And then it's 31 for 3. 13% has gone down since we started. 13% for this film. It's
the story in the first one is weak. Like, they try real hard. The second one, the story feels more like fleshed out. And it from what I remember of it, that was my big takeaway. I couldn't tell you the story. I vaguely remember the story of the first one because I was so annoyed with how bad it was. Because it was like there was a girl and he had to like go back to save the girl. It's like, why would you go back to save that girl you met for 4 seconds? Like, it was like a lot. There was like more to it, but that was something I remember like really being, what the heck? There also, part of this film feels like in the edit, no one had control over it, because there are parts that feel like this should have came before that, and this definitely happened after that. Like, like Statham gives Megan Fox a knife and has a tracker on it. I don't feel like that's a spoiler. I hope it's not.
No.
And he immediately looks at the tracker and it shows where she's going. But then we see him get there before they have even left. Unless I'm completely confused at what's happening, but like, I'm like, okay. And that there's things like that where like, Dolph Lundgren is sharpening that axe. Like, he spits on a brick, like the sharpening thing, and is sharpening the axe on the plane. And then later, one of the guys who's on the plane with him goes, "Is that an axe?" It's like, dude, he was sharpening it
right there opposite him. Yeah.
Like, it feels like those scenes are like maybe disconnected. Like, maybe they filmed one before the other, and then in the edit, they're just like, "Let's just leave it." And it's like, but it doesn't make any sense, guys. And that's just throughout the film. Those are little problems like that where it's just like, come on.
Edit in this is surprising because the editing is awful. Eco always, like you mentioned, he's in this. The best scene of the film, I'm going to throw some praise, is when him and Statham, you've seen the trailers, they throw down at one point. That's cool because, you know, it's, you know, weapons down. Let's just use Eco Aways for what he's good for. Even though, you know, may not be the longest scene in the world. Statham is also known for, he's a seasoned action star now, so they can both sell these fights. And, you know, that was pretty cool. But they've introduced, well, not introduced, so Megan Fox is in the film and Levi Tran is introduced as well. Do not expect any development or even, to be fair, any dignity to be afforded to these two women. Megan Fox is there for what you expect Megan Fox to be in a film like this for. She is there for the lads to look at There's even a scene in there which is specifically there just so the guys in the audience can go, yes. So they're very quick, but it's there. It's, you know, she's not in it for anything other than that. And Levi Tran as well, where she starts, where she ends up, the relationship she forms, I just thought, you know, get out. Just stop. I'm not having this. Let's not lie. I'm not going to lie. It's movies for men. This is a movie for men and men only. And I'm not going to sit here now and say that is ostensibly a bad thing. You know what I mean? There's, you know, films should be for everybody, but there are some films which are specifically aimed at a certain demographic, male, female, whatever. This is more, very much more geared to the men, and they do not shy away from that. That doesn't in itself make it a bad film. The film itself makes it a bad film. But yeah, don't go and expecting to see Levi Tran or Megan Fox come out of this with kind of any shred of dignity. It's not their fault. It's the writing. It's what they're asked to say and do. It's just, it ain't great. I mean, there's two other moments. Again, they're not spoilers. Jason Statham at one point runs towards a crashing plane, and I'm thinking, what are you going to do? Soften its fall? What are you doing? And it's, at one point, Jason Statham gets so angry, he just throws Megan Fox over a chair. I thought, what a reasonable reaction to the news. It's that kind of film. It is not a very good film. It isn't a so bad it's good film. It's a so bad it's so bad film. Because for me, they didn't get the basics of an action film like this right. They failed on the action. They failed on the chemistry. They failed on the gags, or even the cheeky one-liners they throw in. Cheeky slash cheesy. All of it failed. The performances are not good at all. There's really not much I could say about this. That is a positive, JB. And I don't often like doing that because you want to find something, but there are just some films which come along which I can't. I wanted it to be good or fun. I wanted it to be fun. I wanted to throw popcorn in the air and whoop and cheer. No, by the end of it, I thought, yeah, please don't make Expendables 5 or Expendables 5. Just let it die now. You waited 10 years for this. That's it done for me now.
Especially because of something we will discuss in spoilers. They had an opportunity, but they chose not to actually take it, which something that movies, when they do that, often irritate me. So,
yeah.
But that's our review of Expendables 4 or Expendforables. We didn't like it. We wanted to. I feel genuinely honest when I say that. I was really hoping to walk out like, what a blast. And it wasn't. It wasn't a blast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With that, we're going to move into our next segment, which is Chuffed Headlines. This is movie or pop culture news that caught our attention. Matt, what headline grabbed you this week?
John, some good news finally. There is light at the end of the tunnel amidst the strike action going on. My headline comes from The Hollywood Reporter by Katie Kilkenny. Writers Guild reaches tentative agreement with studios and streamers. In a significant development that could bring an end to a historic writer's strike, the union and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers announced a provisional deal on Sunday, the 24th of September. It's been 146 days the writers have been on strike. 146 days, as good as, if not more than, almost, probably, not quite, nearly 6 months, half a year. Was desperately trying to do the maths in my head then. Not quite half a year, but pretty much. All of, you know, everybody's favourite TV shows and films and productions were initially put on hold because the writers had the temerity, John, to want fair rights, fair benefits, fair pay for the work that they do to fund the pockets of the studios and the people at the top. How dare they? And the studios thought the same as well, and weren't going to give it to them. And then the actors said, no, we're going to join in too. The actors, as of now, haven't, the strike is still ongoing. My understanding, as somebody who has no understanding of this, is that a portion of the writer's requests, the WGA requests, also bled into SAG-AFTRA. So you kind of got to imagine that some of those will be adhered to on the actor's side as well. So here's hoping. But this is fantastic news. I mean, it doesn't need me to read the article. The headline in itself tells you what you need to know. It is a tentative agreement with the studios and streamers. But I imagine now this is it, you know, the way people are talking. This is it. This is good news now. The writers can get back. People like Craig Mazin, the Last of Us writer over at Max HBO, tweeted or X'd the other day, you know, whilst the strike isn't officially over, as soon as they say it is, we are going straight back to work and we cannot wait. And I've seen other writers and other creatives saying very similar things. And, you know, shows aside, we all want to see our favourite shows back. We all want to see our favourite films back. John and myself, we, of course we do. But the main thing here is the people who are writing them, the people who are actually breaking their back to give you these shows, are getting fair remuneration. It's not even all about the money. It's the benefits. It's the hours. It's the commitments and agreements that they can't just be flogged anymore. That is a fantastic bit of news. And that is all that matters. That is all that matters. You know what I mean, so many films have been delayed because of this. Who cares? We want them. Yeah, we do, but it doesn't matter. The fact is, the people who give us these films and shows are now getting what they deserve. Roll on the day when SAG-AFTRA turn around and say, we are now in a position where we're happy to realign and get going again, and the Hollywood wheels can get back into motion again. But I think this is great news, and you got to imagine, of course, it's going to happen at some point. We knew the news would come sooner or later that an agreement had been reached. In this case, again, must stress tentatively, but I think it's pretty much going to be okayed in the next 24 to 48 hours, I assume. But you knew the day was coming, but it's so good to have it now. And we just hope that it spurs on AMPTP to get around the table with the actors, SAG-AFTRA, and flesh something out over there so the people who please and delight so many people around the world and also have to have a job can do so under the best conditions. Is that such a bad thing to ask for? No. Am I on a high horse? No, because it's just being a decent person. You should get paid what you deserve, especially when it comes to what you give back to the studios and the corporates. If it wasn't for the writers, if it wasn't for the actors and all the hardworking crew, studios would be bankrupt, and I think they're now starting to realise that. And, you know, more power to the unions. I just hope that they can get around the table now, JB, and get SAG-AFTRA sorted. But the writers, my friend, I know what you're going to say. This is great news, isn't it?
It is, and, you know, we've been looking towards the future of cinema and TV with fear that we wouldn't have another year like COVID, where there's just nothing coming out. Mm-hmm. It's a shame it took this long, not from the strike's perspective, obviously, from the people with the money. Why did you hold back for so long? It was so uncalled for. And I hope they can give the actors what they deserve as well, and won't sit on this for more months. Because if we've resolved one, I assume the goal finally from the studios is that we want to get back into production. So you have to resolve the other too. So I hope they're ready to come to the table with the demands. Or at least something reasonable, because everything I'd heard prior to this weekend was everything they counteroffered was ridiculous, like just not at all, not a true negotiation, right? More of like a, well, what if we gave you an extra slice of pizza? And it's like, what?
Pizza party.
Which, you know, as an educator, that is our bonuses in most cases.
Same in clerical, yes.
So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm hopeful that it's genuine, because the last time there was a strike or the last contract, they didn't negotiate for streaming things. Like, they were like, no, we'll deal with it later. So I hope there's nothing like that this time. I hope they're really taking a deal that they are genuinely happy with and not just being pressured or feeling pressure to take it. I always feel like when you make a big decision like this, there's room for major regret or like a, did we miss something? I hope not. I really hope that this is a legit step in the right direction, that the industry is actually trying to right this very wrong ship. But I guess we won't know until we know.
Yeah, you're right. I'd love to think that this is the perfect deal. Like reading the response, there is very positive coming out of the WGA. They're saying it's they're very pleased with the terms that they've been offered or that they have been accepted. Shall we say in the terms they requested, the ones that have been accepted. The understanding, just from reading the offer, is that I'll read it out now. It's one line. WGA have said, "We can say with great pride that this deal is exceptional, with meaningful gains and protections for writers in every sector of the membership." That sounds like good news to me, JB. So I just hope that we can get the SAG-AFTRA around the table soon and put an end to this, just for the people involved, let alone the productions involved.
Well, my headline is not bad, but it's not positive. It's another Martin Scorsese says moment. Now, I actually pulled the Variety article instead of the GQ article that they are writing about, and that's the important thing. They did not interview Martin Scorsese. GQ did. And Variety is looking for some clickbait. They are talking about the article and some things that he said in the article. And it's a rallying cry that we've heard Scorsese say several times. Ultimately, you know, pointing out the overabundance of the comic book film. And we've talked about that many times on this podcast, and I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on this. But there has been, you know, the usual people who are defending the comic movies, people who aren't. I would say at this point, though, that the general vibe is comic book movie fatigue, right? Like, that seems to be a phrase that's getting said a lot. So I would venture to say more people are in the same mindset of Scorsese, that we do want other movies. We don't only want comic book movies. And I don't think they need to go away. Like, the Western isn't the same now as it was in the 50s. But we still get them from time to time. And sometimes they're pretty good. And other times they're good for the people who like them, and everyone else just kind of acts like they don't exist. And I think we're at a point with comic book movies where that's going to start to happen. We're going to start seeing more and more of them who are explicitly being made for the diehard fans of comic book movies. And then everyone else is just going to kind of let them go. And it's partly because it's oversaturated. There's too much. And they've progressively gotten bad at times and or repetitive. And we see that with all major genre films, especially when the genre is so narrow. But the particular thing that people really got is that Scorsese's pushing for movie fans to back directors like Christopher Nolan and the Safdie brothers. And of course, Nolan famously directed the Batman trilogy, and that's what people are kind of like latching on to in that. And Variety definitely is pushing that. That's like, they're like, oh, he wants us to back the director who did the Dark Knight trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you know genre has very specific set of rules. And I don't think Scorsese is talking about the idea of a comic book when he says comic book movies. He is talking about very specific type of comic book film that the Dark Knight trilogy barely resembles. The only thing the Dark Knight trilogy resembles in a comic book movie is that there is a comic book character in it. Like the opening to the Dark Knight is Heat. He's pulling from Heat, from Michael Mann's heist film. And you have, you know, there's a heist in there's what, two heists or three heists in Dark Knight Rises too. Like, he's taking the comic book characters and then putting them in other genre films, something we have seen a few Marvel movies do. Ant-Man does a heist movie really, really well. I think it's an excellent example of a heist film in the MCU. There's at least two other ones that, like, I can't think of what they are now, but that were, well, Spider-Man Homecoming is a John Hughes film, right? Like, it's very much a throwback to the 80s style, like, high school comedy. Mm-hmm. And those are refreshing and good examples of when the comic movies have had success. But when the ones that we're getting really tired of are specifically, I think, the origin stories that fall so heavily onto the genre tropes, that because it's the only way to do those origin type films. And they are the same over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And there's so many because they're introducing every hero. And few have attempted to just give us a hero in the middle of their run. And I think a lot of us at this point, we get the shorthand of the origin story. So just give us the hero that he already exists. He lives in the world. We understand him. Mm-hmm. And I think to Scorsese's point, though, is a lot of people are pushing back. So I'm not here to dispute him. I also don't think he is inherently saying they shouldn't exist. But I do like variety in my options in all parts of my life, whether we're talking about eating at a restaurant, you know, or going what food I eat on my own. I like to mix it up from time to time. I don't want to have the same thing every single day. And right now, when you look at the schedule, when you see movies that are coming, it is way more blockbusters and big budget blockbusters in theaters than what we're getting overall. Like, there are tons of movies that aren't those things that come out every year, but they aren't getting the push. They aren't giving the opportunity for people to even know that they exist unless you are doing what we do, which is obsess over films, talk about films, write about films to a point where, yes, you kind of have to know about all of the movies, but your casual audience, if we said, hey, have you heard of Past Lives? Most people will say no.
Should have done.
But that's a great example of an excellent film that had a theatrical run, but had zero marketing behind it, that didn't get a push. And now, is that a four quadrant film? No, it's not. But a lot of the superhero films aren't either, you know, and sometimes that's why they're bad, is because they try to be a four quadrant film. And I don't know. We have talked about this many times at this point, I think, but what are your thoughts, Matt? I don't know if you got a chance to look at the article or not.
Yeah, I did. And what I took from it was, I mean, Scorsese says comic book films are manufactured content. He says it's like AI making a film.
Yeah,
he does say that there are incredible directors and special effects guys doing beautiful artwork. But his kind of takeaway is, what does it all mean? What do these films give you? And, it, you know, I get that. I've seen commentators online saying they get more from a young girl with superpowers than they do from Leo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street. I think, I'm not entirely sure you understood the meaning of either of those things. But we've got Killers of the Flower Moon coming out. Scorsese's on the press tour. The GQ are licking their lips now, thinking, we are going to mention, we are going to twist this, and we are going to get a headline, and it's going to blow up. And, you know, congratulations, because it has done. Just reading through the article and seeing the, you know, the furore online, usually on X, some of it is old man yells at cloud. Sorry to the Scorsese lovers out there, but some of it is that. But there's also a lot of pushback from comic book purists who do think that comic book films are high art. Fair enough if you do. Maybe they're not. Maybe they're not. But there are also the film bros who are desperate to defend Scorsese and everything he says. And it just becomes this crapshoot of, and I'm not going to say my opinion is worth any more than anybody else or even better, but you get so much rubbish just spouted online because it comes from a place of passion, but a little bit too much. It's not willing to have a bit of give or take. To what your point there, JB, when I go to a restaurant, I don't just order a burger all the time and chips. I like to order something different. I'll go to a different restaurant sometimes, believe it or not, and I'll order a completely different cuisine from a different part of the world because I want to expand. I want to try and absorb as much of it and eat as much as I can before I shuffle off this mortal coil. I love Star Wars. I love horror films, but I don't just, you know, explicitly watch those films.
Exactly.
I try to watch as many as possible. Do I agree with Scorsese to a point that now things like Quantumania and Multiverse of Madness simply exist just because they've written themselves into the corner of having a forward-thinking narrative cinematic universe and they just have to pump content out? Yes, I do. And I think those films are awful. But do I also look back and think, was Infinity one of the best blockbusters I've seen in the last decade? 100% yes. Do I think some of the other Avengers films or MCU films have been some of the better blockbusters I've seen in the past 15 years? Yes, some of them are, because they are just damn good films that give you what you want, unlike Expendables 4. But then, yeah, there are films out there like Past Lives, which I think is sensational, and films which are the antithesis of comic book films, which I love just as much. And I don't think there's anything wrong with having both. Is there too much on the menu which is aiming towards the big, flashy, £300 million like effects driven monstrosities? Yes, there is. But they make the money, generally speaking, they make the money for the multiplexes and for the studios. A24 have probably made no money really off of Past Lives. They're making about, I think, 70 million on Talk To Me, and that's being seen as a huge success. Now, for first-time directors, it is. For the budget, it is. And for the fact that it's a damn good film, 70 million is huge. But is that going to satiate the multiplex owners? Is that going to keep them alive? So there's this weird kind of give and take where you need these films, and so many people, including myself and you as well, who like these blockbusters. But, you know, will the next generation grow up and think that cinema is just big blockbusters? That is probably true too, but as long as there are Scorsese's, as long as there are Nolan's and the Safdies and Spielberg's who have pushed the envelope before, and new directors come along to push those boundaries, you know, the cinema will always exist. Film or whatever, you know, true film in Scorsese's eyes, true art, will always exist.
The thing that neither of us said, and I didn't think about it until you just said it now, but I hope the GQ article, I need to go and actually read the GQ article, but I hope someone pointed out to Scorsese that the two of the highest grossing films of the summer were not comic book movies. I mean, we had Oppenheimer, who wasn't in the top, it's in the top 10, but Oppenheimer, not a comic book movie, and obviously Nolan, yes, but like Greta Gerwig's Barbie, which in theory is a blockbuster, and it by numbers is definitely a blockbuster, but it's telling a very personal story through IP.
Straddles the line. The IP is the blockbuster, but Barbie, if you told me, John, but is Barbie going to make 1.5 billion? I would have said no, just because I didn't think that mass appeal was there or that blockbuster appeal. But to your point, you're right. It is. And that is worth mentioning.
Yeah. Just that, like this, like when you look at the biggest flops of the summer, they're all comic book movies, right? Everyone expected The Flash to do really well, and it didn't. We expected Blue Beetle to do a little better than it did. Guardians was the one success story all year, because if you pull back a little further, you get Ant-Man bombed, right? I'm not hyped for Aquaman. I don't know if other people are, but
Jesus, well, DC holds the cards now, John, and I don't want to labor this point, but DC has got a fresh reset now. Yes, they're going to have the DCU. I've got to remember to call it that now. I think that's what it's called. But this new timeline, they can now, they have a chance to forge their own tone, potentially have more standalone films within the universe rather than having this big connected glut of content. They can be the ones to push the envelope forward a bit more now. Whether they will remains to be seen, but DC have now got a chance to pull ahead in terms of creativity and, you know, dare I say, artistic license.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if they can, but folks, we know this is a recurring discussion, but it's always a good one because it is, the industry has changed dramatically anyways, but since COVID and the shutdown of the theaters have been struggling. Like, I mean, I went on a Sunday to see Expendables 4. I had maybe 8 people in my theater in a giant, like one of the bigger auditoriums, mind you. I had no line at the concession stand, both before and after the movie. There was nobody there. Like, and it's a Sunday. Now, granted, Sunday, it's football season. People watch football. I went early, so people are at church. Like, there are reasons that people might not be at the theater, but I go enough to see where during the summer
should be more people.
Yeah. And if that's all they're getting, eventually we're going to start losing theaters. And while for a lot of people, they're content with watching their media at home. There's something about the communal nature of cinema. Man, going to a horror movie that's packed and everyone having the same reactions to a scare, there's nothing like that.
John, and you imagine going to watch Infinity War or Spider-Man No Way Home, but you didn't go to watch it. You just went to your front room because the only place you could watch it was on your own TV. Mm-hmm. Are you going to get that event feel? Are you going to get that experience? No, it doesn't matter what setup you've got. No, because it's communal.
And the more, like, again, comedies with the laughter or dramas with the tears, like when it's a communal experience and everyone is on the same page, it's transcendent. And I hate to think we could lose that. Especially, like, I don't, like, of all the things that have gone up in cost, while movie theaters have in the past gone up, they seem to have stabilized at the ticket prices. Like our theater has been charging the same for a long time. And now they have the subscription services, which were not available for a long time, making it a much more feasible option if you are committed to seeing at least two movies. And we're not sponsored by any of these chains, but they seem to be priced about that way, where it's 1 month at the price of two tickets. So if you see more than that, you're not saving money, but you're saving money per ticket. And for people like Matt and myself, who are going to go at least once a week, if not more, it's a great service that we didn't used to have. You know, it used to be like, okay, can I afford $10 every Saturday? And now it's like, well, can I afford $20 every month? And it's like, yeah.
You go by yourself, yeah. They market it over here, the Cineworld card I have, the Unlimited card. Again, we're not sponsored by them, but that's just who I'm with. They even market now in their kind of small print on the big screen. It says, you know,
yeah.
It's basically equivalent of less than two tickets. It's like 1.8 tickets. And it saved me a lot of money. But just, JB, we're reviewing Killers of the Flower Moon in a couple of weeks' time. We will do everything we can to not compare it or mention superheroes and Scorsese during that review. We'll do our best.
But we can't promise. Anyways, that's our headlines for the week. Let's get into what we've been consuming. Matt, I forgot to say before I ask you, media consumption, movies, TV, video games, music, podcasts, anything we use to pass the time between recordings. Matt, like you said, you've had a slim consumption, so I know you must have lost some media weight. I'm hoping you're going to get some of that back up. What have you been consuming since the last time we recorded?
I wish I lost some actual weight as well along with that. But well, last week I didn't get to fully go into what I've seen, but this week I can do, JB. So I've been listening to The Horror Show. You guys know, I don't really listen to many podcasts. I listen to horror film ones, basically. I don't listen to Star Wars ones. I do one, but I don't listen to any. And I don't really listen to too many other film ones other than some here or there, but I always listen to the horror ones, whether that's Nightmare on Film Street, Horror Show, Dead Meat. I know those guys have been on hiatus for a while because of the strikes, but I listened to The Horror Show. They did an episode on Class of 1999 this week as part of their Back to School horror series, and that was a good fun. A film I haven't seen, but I listened anyway because some of these kind of old films I can get away with not watching, but I enjoyed that. I saw Ahsoka Part 6. I saw Part 5 last week, obviously. I don't think I got to mention that, but that was very cool. Part 6 was also very good. I can't even say the weakest one, but when it was good, it was good, but some parts meandered a little bit, and it's clearly leading up to the big, you know, it's not a two-part finale in terms of a 1-2 punch. They are going to be in subsequent weeks, but they're leading up to a big, you know, ending of those final two episodes, which is debuts in a few hours whilst we're recording. I will not be staying up to watch it because I cherish sleep far too much, so I'll be watching that one in the morning. And in terms of films, JB, I have seen, obviously, Expendables 4. I watched a film called The Puppet Man, which is a Shudder original. The guys from Shudder, I love those guys. They sent it to me in my screener account. Can't say anything about it because I'm under embargo. All I will say is it's got two of the gnarliest kills I've seen this year in it. I won't say anything more, but there's a moment where I was like, just end it. Just do it. Oh, just do it. Just do it. And it eventually happened. I saw Dumb Money, the Wall Street GameStop film, which came out last week, I think, Craig Gillespie film. Didn't realise how stacked the cast was for this film. Even in smaller roles. I mean, who's in this? You obviously got Paul Dano, Shailene Woodley are your two, we'll say, the main actors. Paul Dano is your lead. Seth Rogen's in it. Pete Davidson, Talia Ryder, Sebastian Stan, America Ferreira, Dane DeHaan. They're still trying to make him a thing. Dane DeHaan, Nick Offerman's in it, Vincent D'Onofrio, Clancy Brown, Anthony Ramos, who's appearing in a few things recently. You know, it's a big cast in this film, very stacked cast. And I enjoyed this film. I liked it. I didn't love it. I know it's not on the same vein as the Cheetos film, the Blackberry Tetris.
Flaming Hot.
Flaming Hot, yes. Blackberry Tetris and the other.
Oh, man, I forgot about Tetris.
Just really enjoyed that film. And those kind of company story films. This is more about, you know, it's GameStop, it's Wall Street, but it's more about Keith Gill, who is just a regular guy who sinks his life savings into GameStop and plays Wall Street at its own game. And sends them into a spiraling panic when they realise somebody's putting dumb money on, which could cost them a lot of money. It's a good film. I enjoyed it. I kind of hoped to be more drawn into the drama of it, like something like Air. That's what I want, Air. The drama of that film was insanely good, as was Blackberry. They had no right to be as dramatic and as tense as they were. Fantastic. I didn't really get that from Dumb Money. I think Paul Dano is very good in this. Pete Davidson, an actor I'm warming to more and more, he's very cool in his role. Everybody's really competent. Everyone's really good. It just didn't grab me like I hoped it would. But still, very decent film, well worth your time. And literally just before coming on air, as JB will be able to testify to, I watched the new horror film on over there in the States. It's Hulu. In the United Kingdom, it stars Disney Plus. No One Will Save You. That is, that's not a threat, John. That's just the name of the film. It's directed by Brian Duffield. And it really only stars Caitlin Dever, who was so good in Booksmart. And I really like Caitlin Dever in pretty much everything she's in. I think she's a really up-and-coming actress. And this is a film, again, I'm not going to give any spoilers. You know, the synopsis, Bryn, Caitlin Dever, finds solace within the walls of the home where she grew up until she's awakened one night by strange noises, and I'll just say from intruders. And any more than that, you think Home Invasion with a twist. I enjoyed this film. I'd heard, because JB mentioned it in his message off air, that hearing good things. I've heard good things, so I think I went in with, you know, expanded expectations that this was going to blow me away. And instead, I just thought it was a very decent, very pretty, very, very solid film. I'd probably knock it straight down to 7.5 out of 10, maybe even a 7. Caitlin Dever is so committed. She's really good in this. She's asked to do an awful lot. It's quite a challenging role because it is pretty much just a one-woman show. And then what she's up against will either work for people or it won't. I just wish in some cases studios would just go for practical or prosthetics and costumes and other things because it looks so much better. They didn't. And the way the film ended, I think it got a bit bloated towards the end. It lost its way. I thought the ending was a little bit naff. The first 10 minutes actually is very slow. It sounds weird because what I'm about to say now is the film it's not slow in getting where it needs to. It's, you know, it opens and before we know it, we're in. We know this has happened. The exciting incident's happened. We're off. But the kind of 10 minutes that leads up to that is actually incredibly slow. And I was wondering if it was actually going to pace up a little bit, but very solid film. I enjoyed it. It's one of the one of the higher horror films I've seen this year. It's more of a mystery film as well than straight up horror, horror mystery drama. Some of the moments are quite tense. There's some good. The production design is very decent, and Caitlin Dever is very good leading this thing. I just think I went in expecting it to blow me away, and instead I came out pretty satisfied. So. That's what I've seen this week, JB. What about yourself? You've always got a decent selection.
Well, Blank Check did The Game, so I rewatched The Game. I haven't seen The Game, David Fincher's Game, for a long time. It's good. It's not surprising, but it was better than I remembered. Apparently, all I really remembered was the final scene, and I didn't remember a lot of the other stuff to it, but I was like, oh, all right. A lot more going on than I recall. I finished an audiobook for The House of the Cerulean Sea. Really love that book. It's a standalone. It is a fantasy book, but it's like fantasy ingrained in our reality. So it's like set in our world, sort of. I really liked it a lot. It clicked for my sensibilities all the way around. And also, just listen today, Blank Check is doing on their Patreon commentary on the Pierce Brosnan Bond films.
Okay.
So I have not seen any of the Pierce Brosnan Bond films in their entirety. Really? Something I think knew.
I thought in my head, I know you are the Craig ones are really where you kind of actually stuck with. I thought you'd seen the Brosnan ones and maybe fell off, but
I've seen moments of them. Like, I know the Christmas joke with the Denise Richards film.
So bad.
I a while ago, like many years ago at this point, I bought a Brosnan box set, Bond Brosnan box set. They had it like at Walmart where it was like a one single box had the movies in it. Right. So I bought that, had it, and I was like, great, I'll get to watching. And they're like, four films. I'm like, four? I have three. And so I was really irritated to find out that the Bond Brosnan box set that I bought during the Daniel Craig run of the films only has three of the four Brosnan Bonds.
Which one's missing?
So that's what annoys me more, Matt. That's what annoys me more, is it has GoldenEye, World Is Not Enough, and Die Another Day.
Die Another Day, yeah.
So it skips the second movie.
One, three, and four, yeah.
Why would you do that, box set? Like, so I just ordered Tomorrow Never Dies this morning, so I'll have that tomorrow, which I'm excited because it's Michelle Yeoh, and I'm like, oh, all right, cool. I watched GoldenEye last night, though, because I wanted to listen to the podcast. GoldenEye's good, not surprised. But I had played enough of the game. I mostly played the multiplayer in GoldenEye.
Good job.
But I had played enough of the game where, like, the opening sequence, I'm like, wow, this is the game. Like, this is just what the game was. That's all I remembered of the game, because I think that's all I ever... I didn't have a 64, so I only played at a friend's house. Editor for Burke Reviews, Dave. Back when we were in high school. But yeah, I liked the movie. Still, I think the Bond girl, quote unquote, because she's a bit different, is maybe the most over the top as an actress. Like, she's really, like, screaming and selling. Like, she's a lot. Also, the actress that plays Jean Grey in the X-Men movies.
Famke Janssen.
Yeah, she's playing on a top. or whatever. And she's not a great actress. Like, I really don't think she's, like, super great. And her character in that is a little bit much. But still a lot of fun. It's definitely tonally completely different than the Craig Bonds, which I really like the tone in the Craig Bonds. So it's still an adjustment.
Yeah.
But definitely, I can see. I hear they get progressively worse, though.
100%.
Yeah, so I'm not exactly thrilled to go through all of them, but I did sit through the Moors, so this is, I guess, the next logical set.
I'm thrilled to hear what you think about them all.
Yeah, but I do own, I technically own all of them now. I did have to get the second one, which is on the way now. So that's two of the movies I watched tied to the Blank Check podcast. Okay. I caught, these two are, there are reviews up, one at BurkeReviews.com and one at Disappointment Media. I watched The Creator, the new Gareth Edwards film that comes out on the 29th. I didn't like it. And Sean, myself, David, and a friend of the show, I'll leave his name out just because he's not officially been on this podcast, but he's been in another Brick Review podcast back in the day. The four of us walked out, didn't like it. It's rare for us to all have the same opinion. Like, it was even, I think Tuna was like, oh, I'm really glad you didn't like it, to me, because he thought he was going to have to, like, we were going to argue. And I was like, nope. I was trying actively to really connect to this film. And it was just like, what are y'all doing? And this is one of those movies that I already see. It's going to make me take a firmer stance than I probably would if I wasn't seeing people, like, lauded as a masterpiece, comparing it to the sci-fi, like, Fury Road. And I'm like, no, you don't get to do that because it's pretty. Like, it's no, there's so many story problems in this movie. And I don't want to, Matt still hasn't seen it. And I don't want to talk too much about it and potentially sully Matt's experience.
No. Well, the screening, the multimedia screening for UK critics is now this second. Well, I think it finished an hour ago at the Science Museum in London. Now, I couldn't go, frankly, because it's not payday for another few days. And I'm not spending my last bit of money getting to London and back when I could see the film in a day or two's time. So seeing on Thursday.
So,
but I'm going in with an open mind still, JB, and I respect your opinion, but I'm going in open-minded.
But our embargo lifted this afternoon at noon, so my review is up at BurkeReviews.com. Nice. If you want to read my thoughts, I think they're articulated pretty well. But then I caught The Kill Room. Are you familiar with The Kill Room?
I don't think I am.
It's Uma Thurman, Mangiello.
Mangianello.
Always Room for Jello, and Samuel L. Jackson. Samuel L. Jackson is playing a Jewish deli owner with a beard. So Uma Thurman's character owns an art gallery. Joe Mangiello is a hitman for the mob who has a very particular way in which he kills people, which is with a plastic bag suffocating them. And Samuel L. Jackson is his go-between. Like, they go to him to hire the killer, and they're looking for a new way to launder their money and team up with the art gallery as a way of like, we'll sell art and that will clean our money. It's definitely in the vein of a Coen Brothers style, like comedy, like crime comedy. And those tend to work for me. So I enjoyed the film. Uma Thurman mostly is having a good time. It seems, Samuel Jackson is just being Sam. He always is the ultimate professional. I like Mangiello or whatever his name is. He's got a presence, man. Like he's not like a Shakespearean caliber actor, so to speak, but he has his tools and he knows how to use them. And I vibe with him as an actor, and I like him. There's like a little bit of vulnerability to his presence, and it really works in this, as he kind of finds that he likes art, which he didn't know getting into this. It's definitely not like a masterpiece or anything, but I had more fun watching it than the creator. So there you go. And I rewatched with my wife, Book Club, The Next Chapter. It's the second time I've seen that movie. I like those movies. I don't know what it is. They're the old lady comedies really tend to work for me. There you go.
What did your wife think of it?
Oh, we saw it in theaters together. So that's what she like threw it on. And like, I could tell she wanted me to sit and watch it with her. So I did. We enjoyed it. It's very charming. Nice. Yeah. Keeping up with Only Murders in the Building. I think we're two episodes away from the season finale. Really, really love this show. I can't stress enough. If you have access to Only Murders in the Building, that you go through all three seasons, they're great. And
I have it on my screener account.
Oh, you should watch it, man. It's good.
I have them all.
And Mortal Kombat 1, I think one of the best fighting games to come out in recent years. It's been so much fun playing it. I don't remember the last time a fighting game has really hooked me. And I also don't feel like, sometimes I get real anxious. I don't like to lose. And I don't mind losing in this, but also like the controls feel so natural that I'm finding it hard to lose against the computer. And not in a bad way. I've been playing Mortal Kombat since it was in the arcades, MK1. Like I used to frequent the arcades. And so it's just been great feeling that connection, that draw to want to play the game. It makes it feel like the money's worth buying, you know, like I'm like, oh, I actually want to hop on this and play, and do like, I'm collecting all of this. They have gear now, like you unlock, it's a lot of aesthetic stuff, but, I've been really like actively trying to get like every character a new piece of gear so I can like show off, like, look, I got this season's gear. 'Cause every season will have a new theme. This season is, something with fire. I forgot what it's called, but it's like Scorpion inspired. So everything's like, everybody has like fire imagery to their costume. So like this orange or yellow, and it's, man, I wouldn't have thought I'd get that kind of hooked into it, but I am. So that's what I've been consuming, Matt.
The usual smorgasbord of fun.
With that, folks, we are done. But before we leave, we have to check in with each other and make sure we're staying bloody awesome. So I need to know, Matt, what are you doing to stay bloody awesome?
To stay bloody awesome, JB, I am dropping a shameless plug. However, it is relevant. The return of Movie Astrology. Who hosts that? Me and John do. So it's our own show. But the return of that, man, it had to be number one because it is a bloody awesome thing to be able to do. We released our first episode in a year, though we have been meaning to do it pretty much every month since that. We've been talking about it quite a lot. We're dropping a new format. We've got a great new format where we cover 1 year in film, but rather than across a kind of bloated 2.5 hour episode, we are now splitting it into 6 episodes. One every month we're looking at. Plus we've got a video podcast on Spotify and YouTube as well. So we're branching out a little bit there, but we just get to talk about film history. Movie Astrology is our history lesson for ourselves and for you guys, where we get to tick off some films from our watch list, hopefully find some new favorites or new films to avoid. And we love doing it. It's a different vibe to the BAMP in the sense that we're going back in time. And so some things are even newer to us than the new films or films that we've heard about for decades. And we're finally getting around to watching it, or this actor or actress we've heard so much about, it's the first time maybe we're seeing one of their films. There's that kind of almost spontaneity involved with it. But we enjoyed doing it. We had our first episode on 1966, which covered like an introduction to the year and also the best of the rest of the films that didn't make the top 10 highest grossing films. We dove into the ones that we'd seen or the ones that we thought were of most interest. But yeah, really, really enjoying getting back into the saddle there. So we're hoping to do it once a month for about an hour a month. We're going to talk about film history, and we hope you guys enjoy it as much as we enjoy doing it. So that's how I've been saying bloody awesome, JB. You're involved with that one.
It's fun to be a part of the bloody awesome. I'm glad it's making you feel bloody awesome. I could have used that one as well, but I have to pay tribute to my loving wife because it was her birthday yesterday. And
happy birthday.
We, you know, I got her a nice cake from our supermarket chain here that makes, I argue, the best cakes. Like, I've never been disappointed with a cake from our supermarket. My wife likes simple things, so simple vanilla cake with buttercream icing. But I had them put, instead of roses, there was an option for mums. And I was like, because you're a mum, so you get mums on your cake instead. Tastes the same, because it's just icing with color. But, you know, terrific. And got her a little present, but then my daughter and I took her mother and my wife to Outback. Not sponsored, but my wife's pick. She wanted to go to Outback, and we, you know, we went all in. We got the Bloomin' Onion.
Steaks?
Oh, dude. Not only did I get steak, Matt, I got to talk about my food for a second.
Please do.
I got, I was like, yeah, I'm going to enjoy myself. We don't go to Outback very often, but they have a new, it's a fried chicken with the Bloomin' Onion batter on it, which they've had for a while, right? But this one, they've added hot honey, which is a new trend, and I'm loving the hot honey trend.
It is.
Also, I think they were habanero slices on the chicken.
God damn
it. It was so good. It was very spicy. Like, the first pepper, I was like, maybe I shouldn't eat the pepper. But then I ate the rest of the peppers, because I'm no coward. And it was delicious. Good. My sirloin was delicious. My potato was delicious. My broccoli was delicious. The Bloomin' Onion was quite good. It was a good meal, and we celebrated my wife's birthday. We came home. We were all too full. Waited a good hour before we finally sang happy birthday and cut the cake.
Discipline.
But yeah, and I love her so much. I'm so happy as we've been together for so long now, in the best way. Like, I remember when we first got together, like, I think my longest relationship was like 2 years, and like, it felt like so much work to make 2 years happen. And obviously it ended that previous relationship. And so I remember pretty much every relationship after that, I was always so like, it's so much to make a relationship last. I kind of went in thinking, I just will be in short term relationships. And so over 20 years together, it's been incredible, spending so much of my life, over half my life now, with her. And so happy, happy birthday. It was fun celebrating. So that's how I stayed bloody awesome, was making sure my wife felt loved on her birthday.
Yeah, make this old man well up on the other side of the Atlantic. Unexpectedly tender moment from the book, though. Mama, I need to get me one of those. A cake, not the wife. I need to get me one of those. A cake. and the other one as well, of course.
Whenever you finally make it to Florida, we'll ensure that we go and get a cake from the supermarket chain, because they are.
I need to talk to you about that as well, off air. But no, very happy birthday to your wife, Kathy. I hope she had a wonderful day. And the meal in itself sounds perfect. I've had an Outback before, just once, because I used to have one or two over here where I used to live. And it was very, very nice. But like you, I didn't go there very often. So yeah, I'm glad to hear it was a success.
Well, folks, we will be back next week to finally talk about Mr. Kramer. That's right, folks. Mm-hmm. John Kramer returns for the first time on our podcast. Well, he won't be here in person, of course. No. But Saw X is in theaters everywhere, and that's what we're going to cover. We're going to talk Saw X, and for clarity, that's Saw 10, but you know, Fast X earlier this year, Saw X. Hopefully, we're going to get a crossover franchise.
Saw X, but it's set before Saw 4 or something. I don't know how it works.
It's important, folks. You have to do your research. I had to watch 6 and 7 and then read a synopsis to connect all the ones I'd seen but forgotten. But yeah. We're going to be reviewing Saw X, so come to the show ready. You know, if you'd like to play a game. In the meantime, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to us on social media. On Instagram, we're at Bloody Awesome Movie Pod, and Twitter,
we are at BAMP underscore podcast, BAMP underscore podcast.
On Facebook, you can search Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. I feel like I really messed up the word bloody there, but Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. You can follow me on BurkeReviews.com and at BurkeReviews on all the social media platforms. Matt, where can they find you?
Yeah, whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. You can just search for What I Watch Tonight across all of the socials, including Letterboxd.
If you like what we're doing here at the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast and over at Movie Astrology, we ask that you take a minute and give us that 5-star review on whatever podcast catcher you use to listen. And if you want to, go over to YouTube, follow Movie Astrology there, and give us the like button, because
please do.
Or slam the subscribe button on there. It's going to be a monthly show. And our current plan is to do video for astrology and mix it up a little bit, give you something different so it's not exactly the same. Even though we're not reviewing new movies there, no. We're reviewing movies from a specific year. It gives us a lot of reason to watch movies that maybe we wouldn't have ever got to. Sometimes that's a great thing.
As well.
I will say there's at least 3 or 4 movies in the top 10 from 1966 that we are currently in the middle, the beginning of, that I would probably had never would have known to watch that I loved.
One I would never have watched at all, which we're going to talk about. One which I think was almost damn good, but will be revealed on astrology.
Several films from 66 that I really, really liked a lot. So
nice.
Listen, folks, if you can. With that, we encourage you to keep watching movies.
And stay bloody awesome.
Blood, 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 bloody. 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 Blood, blood, bloody.
Awesome!